You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 39 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I have a different one for you today. I have Jodie Londo with me and we are going to talk about sport, we're going to talk about Hirschsprung's, and we're also going to talk about the medical industry as well. And welcome to the podcast, Jodie.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
I appreciate having you on. When you messaged me, because we've messaged back and forth a little bit, you messaged me about your story that we'll get into in a bit and what you do for a living, as well as having Hirschsprung's. I thought, well, how could I not have you on? You're absolutely perfect for the podcast, both with the Hirschsprung's, obviously with my background in sport. I love talking about sport. Every available opportunity, I will talk to anyone and everyone about sport. So absolutely perfect. So thank you so much for coming on. I'll start, if I may, from the beginning, when you were diagnosed with total colonic Hirschsprung's, obviously being a very rare condition. How was that like growing up sort of with total colonic Hirschsprung's?
Definitely different. I think several aspects, not only just going through the surgeries as a child. Of course, I have minimal recollection of some of that. There's certain pieces that do click out as far as memory wise, you know, requirements of, you know, rectal flushes I had to have on a regular basis, trips to see my surgeon, who is fantastic, Dr. William Toyama, who I attribute to saving my life. And then also just dietary restrictions, things that would upset my stomach, things that would cause pain that I couldn't eat like the rest of the kids when I was growing up. I had a lot of restrictions, and whether it be activity or being afraid to stay over at a friend's house because I didn't know if I would get diarrhea, if I would have stomach pain, if I would get sick, and I didn't want to be embarrassed in front of friends. So yeah, I feel like it was maybe a little bit different than those that I grew up with, definitely.
Yeah. You mentioned dietary restrictions as well. Was that, in a lot of cases I see, and in my own Hirschsprung's, nobody kind of said to me, right, you can't eat this or you can't eat that. Was that sort of a case of trial and error with you, or were you told specifically from sort of day one, don't eat this, don't eat that?
Well, I think where it came from is that, you know, my mom used to tell me, you know, the certain things that, like chocolate, I couldn't eat, things that were high sugar, things that would basically contribute to diarrhea for the most part, that would lead to dehydration. So those were the things that I was kept away from.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes absolute sense. But when you said with the sort of social barriers as well, in sort of not sure you can stay over at somewhere and do this and do that, did that sort of happen all throughout sort of childhood, or did that sort of stop at various points?
I think it improved, and I think I had friends that understood what I was going through. Especially my best friend growing up, who really truly understood. And so it made it more easy to be able to partake in those activities, knowing that your friends knew. But I think the other part was even just on the social aspect as a teenager. And, you know, I'd mentioned about your podcast with Zoe Coletti, is that, you know, bikini as a 17-year-old was not like any other 17-year-old. When you have, you know, a vertical scar across your whole abdomen from initial surgery, you've got your scar from, you know, the ileostomy that you had. I mean, it wasn't just like putting on a bikini and having a flat stomach or you know, I never had that. And so you find yourself covering up, or is it okay for me now to wear bikinis? So I think that those were the body image things that you struggle with all of the multiple abdominal surgeries that you have. So the scars do subtly warrant some aches, but now I look at them as a little bit differently.
That's an interesting point you made, because I see this so often. I was just spending most of my time on Instagram now and promoting a lot of the podcast on there and Facebook as well. You do see a lot more people who model with stomas. And then you mentioned Zoe there as well. And part of her range, that she said in her interview, when she was picking out models to model their swimwear brand, she did pick specifically people with scars, which I thought was really, really interesting. Because it's now, I mean, obviously you don't see it sort of all over the place, but I think I tend to see a lot more people in bikinis, in swimsuits, with stoma bags, with scars, and sort of less, I don't know whether ashamed, I don't know is the right word, but less sort of wanting to cover up their scars and what have you. But I still get your point there, because obviously that's very much for me as well, having lots and lots of scars, and body confidence and body image, I think is something that's not really talked about as much. I certainly don't, probably should mention it more on here, and I don't as much. But no, I definitely get your point with that. And especially obviously having sort of total colonic as well. I presume as well, you have the sort of the pull through scar, yep. the one that we all,
yes,
all have. I tend to call it, I remember talking to another guest about the pull through scar, and remember it looking like a train track. So that's what I've tended to call it. With its sort of, again, for those who are unaware, kind of a, usually a big scar across and then sort of little stitches all the way through. So it looks like a train track, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, so no, I definitely get your point on that. I'd also like to, as well, we mentioned at the beginning about sport, and we were going to talk about sport. And you have competed and finished, three Ironmans. Are they still called Ironmans if you're a woman?
Yes. Yeah, they are. There's certain, I think I've heard a different language. I know there's some side organizations at Iron FE. I don't know if you've seen that. Female, Iron Woman. I've had some people say, who don't really understand Iron Man, oh, you're an Iron Woman. No, I'm an Iron Man. That's the correct term. So, yes.
Right. Okay. Because I was searching through and thinking, because I follow a fair few fitness people, and the only thing I could see was Iron Man, and I thought, well, should it still just be called Iron Man, or should it be called Iron Woman? I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, no, I but also you said with the Iron Mans that you have completed three of them. When did you start getting into that kind of intense training?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, I did my first triathlon back in, 2000-ish, 1999. My good friend I grew up with had talked me into doing a triathlon in Madison, Wisconsin. This was before Ironman came to Madison. And I thought, what am I doing? But I took it more as a challenge. Like, I can do this, so she can do this. And afterwards, I felt the reward and the pride that you have finishing that, after I had my son, I thought, I'm getting back into this. I'm definitely doing this. I was told growing up that it might be difficult for me to have children. And so I thought, hey, I had a healthy child. I was very lucky in the aspect that neither of my children have Hirschsprungs. But I thought it's just more inspiration to do something more challenging. And so my first Ironman I completed was in 2012, and that was in Madison, Wisconsin. And that was extremely emotional to be able to meet, meet that accomplishment. And the people that you see along the way, I think there's a lot of camaraderie that happens within triathlon. You have people who are cancer survivors. You have people that are amputees. You have, I think the community of Ironman is definitely one that will, you know, coming in with somebody with Hirschsprungs or any kind of challenge, it's inviting, it's supportive. And so I felt like that was a good place to kind of continue sports in triathlon. So yeah, and then it just kind of blew up to its own. It started doing more halves. I did Escape from Alcatraz in San Francisco, which is quite a challenge. And I think it just keeps pushing you to know, hey, I can do this. I don't have to be defined by, you know, not having a colon doesn't mean I can't get through this. I mean, there were challenges for sure. Dehydration challenges. I had in a 70.3 where I had to go to the medical tent, but finished, made it through. So yeah, you have a mindset that definitely goes with that. And I think anybody who has gone through a chronic disease and stepped up and fought through it in a positive manner can do these things. They can do anything. There is no boundaries. It's just figuring out how you do it that your body can handle.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely each to their own, and finding your own way is what I tend to find. And you said the escape from Alcatraz. How far was that one?
That was a unique distance. It's not a half, and it's not an Olympic distance. So actually, I kind of fell within a really weird year where they had a small craft alert, and so we were on the ferry going out to Alcatraz Island, and they had to cancel us for the swim because the waves were so high and it was dangerous. So we ended up starting on the bike. Unfortunately, as I was going down one of the hills in San Francisco, I had somebody kind of swerve in front of me. I went to avoid them, ended up going over my handlebars and fractured a rib. But I thought, hey, it's only a rib fracture. I came too far. I worked too hard. So I got myself out of the ambulance. My family got me back to the transition. And they said, if you can get yourself back there, you can continue. So I completed the run with the sand ladder, the infamous sand ladder in San Francisco. And as I was going up the sand ladder, I met up with another lady who was recovering from pneumonia. And so her and I went together and encouraged each other to get to the finish line. So again, it's the perseverance part. I think that anybody with a chronic disease, there's a mindset that you can attain. And I think after you've overcome so much, as I read stories of children and families with Hirschsprungs, it's the mindset is different. I think that you can push yourself and you can do things that you never thought you can do, and the reward is exceptional.
Definitely. That's incredible. Your story about going over the handlebars and then coming, I mean, how many people, I wonder, would have just gone, well, that's me done for the day. You know, would have just said, nah, a rib fracture as well. And he said, it's only a rib fracture. It's still a rib fracture. You know, it's no mean feat. But you talked about perseverance there. I do wonder how many people have just said, yeah, I'll call it a day and maybe try again next year. But that's an incredible story. Thank you so much for sharing. And also when it comes to training, I know you talked a little bit about diet, and was there anything in particular, apart from dietary and taking on more fluids, that you had to do specifically in your training because of Hirschsprungs?
Hydration was a big one. And figuring out, in the world of triathlon, or probably any sports, there's a multitude of different companies, different brands of you know, nutrition that you can put in your bottle that includes protein, some that includes carbs. And it was figuring out which one I could tolerate. Well, trial and error told me there wasn't many that I could. Eating on the bike, there's certain things my stomach could handle, certain things couldn't. I went through one triathlon with horrible diarrhea through the whole thing. That was in Whistler, Canada. And I was basically like a dish rag by the time I passed. But then I knew, well, that nutrition didn't work. So I kind of got to more holistic, plain, very bland type options that I had to get through to have enough energy. And there were times where I'd be training and I would just lose energy. I'd call my husband. I'm like, you have to pick me up. I'm just shot. I can't do it today. So when do you push? When do you not push? Because again, I don't have the same absorption in my intestines like other people do. So learning what your boundaries are and how you overcome those is a big challenge when you're in sports, whether you're a 12-year-old in sports and trying to stay hydrated on a hot day, or, you know, you're older and taking on, you know, higher level sports, you have to figure out how is my body going to react? Because it's not going to be the same as anybody else's.
Definitely. And I'll touch on the third part that we were going to talk about. As you are a pediatric nurse practitioner, so did, I presume, having all of that knowledge helped you in terms of your training for Ironman?
Well, Ironman kind of came before that. So I think becoming a pediatric nurse practitioner and talking to families about nutrition, I think there's certain aspects I can recollect in my mind. Although I don't have any patients that have Hirschsprung's right now, more in other things that actually I feel like Hirschsprung patients do deal with, whether it be constipation, diarrhea, you know, irritable bowel syndrome is a big thing that I deal with every day. But yeah, I think there's some downfall of really listening. I think the one thing as a GI nurse practitioner is that I try and listen. You need to listen to the families, listen to the child. What is their lived experience and how do you meet them at that point to care the best for them? And I think walking in the shoes of GI challenges, I have some firsthand knowledge of, you know, what are they feeling and how is it truly impacting their life? So I think that that's really helped me be a better provider by far.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, from what I've seen as well within that field, people who have experienced symptoms of IBD, IBS, then are far more relatable as well. I think if you've gone through a lot of those things, it then you can talk from lived experience. And obviously you have a lot of those lived experiences as well. Another question I was going to ask you as well, and you talked about becoming the practitioner after Ironman's. What made you think I really want to be a pediatric practitioner?
So this stems back to when I was hospitalized as a child. You know, I had multiple infections and nutritional issues following my, you know, totalplectomy and ileostomy. And so during that time, I had a nurse, her name was Ann Roosh, who cared for me and got very close to my family. And as I was growing up, she was at my birthday parties. And when I went through nursing school, she pinned me in graduation. So she had followed that influence and the things that she did for me and my family as a nurse from little on, that inspired me to want to do the same. So I always wanted to be a pediatric nurse practitioner, specifically in GI, so that I can give back the things that I received as a patient back to those families and have that understanding that I walked in those shoes. And I feel like I have that gift to give back and help other families get through their challenges and see their children improve and have a better quality of life.
That's fantastic. That's really good to hear, because I love talking to people who have been through all manner of, whether it be illnesses, challenges, and what have you, and then think, actually, I want to give back. And so many people who've been on this podcast who go through all manner of illnesses And then they think, actually, I want to give back in some way, whether it be charity work, whether it be in a medical field, whether it be just talking about their experiences. And that's one thing I really, really love to see. I love to see people, you know, really give back. Because your knowledge is going to be unlike anybody else's knowledge. And I know we all have lived experiences and we all have different experiences and we all have unique experiences. But what you've done in terms of the Ironmans and what you've done, we've seen in terms of a lot of things in your life, are going to be unique. So you can pass that message on to somebody who might have gone through, you know, a similar thing potentially. And you mentioned as well, in terms of you haven't seen anybody or haven't come across anybody with Hirschsprung's, and with it being sort of, I say it's a rare disease, and it is a rare disease, but I also see 1 in 5,000 as, to me, one per sort of small town in here in the UK. So it's rare, but not sort of, you know, we're not talking 1 in a million type deal. Are you surprised slightly that you haven't seen anybody, especially dealing in GI disorders, haven't seen anybody with Hirschsprung's?
A little. I've had some babies that have exhibited some symptoms, like, you know, explosive stool, not being able to pass stool effectively after birth. I mean, there's some kids that I have sent for workup, even late stage Hirschsprung's, which has come back negative. So I'm a little surprised, but yet I'm also relieved because, you know, it's nice to see, oh, I think they may have it, but okay, looks like they're not. We can take that off the table as, you know, something that could be contributing. But yeah, I am a little surprised, but hopefully we're intervening early and we're finding these children, you know, before a later stage diagnosis, and they're getting the appropriate treatment ahead of time. So that could be that's reassuring in that aspect.
That's fantastic. That's really, really good to see. And one thing that always tends to fascinate me is genetics, in terms of if you have Hirschsprung's, you know, how likely is it to pass on to children, for example? And you mentioned, as we were talking, you have two children who are both without Hirschsprung's. Were you ever given like a percentage of this, you know, might happen, might not happen in terms of Hirschsprung's?
Actually, I never did. And I don't know if, you know, I was diagnosed in, 1973. So, you know, thinking back at what they knew or didn't know at that time, but we don't have anybody in my family that had it. So there's no, we have no idea where it came from. There's no way to trace it back. I was considered high risk when I had both my children, and they did watch very closely for that. So I'm very grateful that they're both healthy kids and never had that issue. But yeah, I don't feel like that's talked about enough, is the genetic component. And then I sometimes, you know, back in my mind, I even question, is it fully genetic? I guess because in my experience, we don't know. It could be a very distant relative as well that we don't know about. But yeah, I think that's an interesting topic that I see discussions about Hirschsprung's, and that's not always something that's brought up. They call it genetic, but the in-depth conversation, I think, is something that should be brought to the table more than it is.
I think so. I think it's just something that I often think about, just purely from a personal point of view. It's because I, like you, I'm the only person with Hirschsprung's in my family, extended family. You had no idea where it came from. My parents had two children after me, both without Hirschsprung's. My older brother doesn't have Hirschsprung's. So it's, I mean, in terms of the stats, it's roughly 1 in 4. My parents had 4 children and I was the unlucky one. So it's kind of, but it always fascinates me. Always fascinates me because I am speaking to people who have Hirschsprung's themselves and then have children and they have Hirschsprung's, or have children and they don't have Hirschsprung's. So it's something, and especially with you working in GI, or pediatric GI, always fascinates me whether you've been told a percentage, known a percentage, or what have you. But no, that's fantastic. Thank you. In terms of, as well, if I flick back a little bit towards the Ironman.
Yeah.
I know you mentioned one particular story about falling off a handlebars and then fracturing a rib. Was there any other stories or any other incidents that could be Hirschsprungs or non-Hirschsprungs related that you'd like to share as well from your Ironman journeys?
As far as different aspects of the races, I think, you know, for me personally, whether it was the condition, I mean, I have raced from, you know, Whistler, Canada, down to Louisville, Kentucky, and, you know, it's the conditions that you race in, whether it's an altitude, it's being heat induced. I did some training in Colorado with Matt Hansen's team, he's one of the triathlon pros, and the heat and humidity in the climbs and the altitude in Colorado was quite challenging for me. And it's frustrating because you see other people, you know, you're training, you know, you're there, but they're going past you and you're like, what's going on? I don't have any energy. And so did I prep? It's the prep ahead of time. Did I hydrate several days ahead of time? It's not like somebody who can hydrate the day before and be fine. Doesn't work that way. And, you know, do you have enough sodium? That was one challenge I had, is it seemed like I lost a lot of sodium and keeping that in check. So, yeah, that was, I think, even water condition, you know, the effects of blue-green algae, what that would do to me versus someone else. And so I had that experience, trained for, was going for my fourth Ironman at Madison, Wisconsin, and got violently ill in the water after the first pass. We did two loops in the water for the full. After the first one, I was throwing up in the water. Turned out there were others that got sick, but it was possible blue-green algae. And so it's just things like that. You know, is the water clear? Going to Whistler, it was nice and clear. I didn't worry about that as much because I know it's not just going to be a little illness. It's going to be a lot of illness for me. So all of those environmental factors.
So I suppose it's one of those things where it can be a little bit on the day thing. You can only worry about so much and only prepare for so much. We can't imagine you could do a lot of preparation for blue-green algae.
No, you can't. And you know, I think, Tom, one of the things that I look back at triathlon is, you know, the other people that you run next to, talking to people who are cancer survivors. And you think, you know, I thought to myself, yeah, I don't have a colon, but look at what they've gone. So I think it puts your condition, not that I'm lessening Hirschsprung's disease in the least, but you have to think about, you know, all of us have our challenges and, you know, you come across these people and you bond with them, whether it's talking on the run portion or you're in transition, prepping in the morning before the race, and everybody has a purpose and a reason to be there. So that's where the community piece, I think, of sports in general, that you can find people that have had different challenges, yet you're similar in some aspects and you bond and you support each other. And I think just in sports and triathlon in general, that's what I found. And that was my happy place.
Definitely. I'll bring up a couple of points that you mentioned that are really good there. As we're recording now, not by the time people hear this, but as we're recording now, the Paralympic Games is going on at the moment. And it always... I love watching the Paralympics. Always fascinates me about how people find a way round competing in different sports. And it can be whatever, whether you need the sport adapting or whether they've found special equipment or whatever it might be to adapt and make sure that they take part at a really high level. It's something that absolutely fascinates me. Have you caught any of the Paralympics that's been going on?
I've just seen a couple of updates. My youngest is starting as a senior this year, and so we've been quite busy. but yeah, I did see a couple of some of the athletes. The triathlon was, I think, postponed at this point because of the water conditions there. So I was kind of watching that on the app. But yeah, I think to your point, it's not the handicap, it's the mental fortitude, and that's what can push you through anything. So I think having Hirschsprung's disease, because it gave me, I think, a mental capacity that maybe I don't know if I would have had. So I do appreciate having that disease. And when they talk about Hirschsprung's warrior, especially this month, right?
Yeah.
In September, it brings a sense of, I don't know, kind of calmness. Like, hey, I truly am a Hirschsprung's warrior. And thank you, Hirschsprung's, for, you know, unfortunately, I was chosen to have one of those. But the outcome is, I think there's positives that we have to focus on as well.
I do. I echo that. Definitely echo that. And I don't know whether it's the same for you, but for me, what it's given me is incredible high tolerance to pain. So going through a lot of surgeries before the age of 2, I think it was about 7 surgeries, something or other, or the age of 1 or 2, that then suddenly, you know, lots of things that hurt other people don't hurt you, and you have a very high pain threshold, and that can really help for the sports as well. Did you find that you also had a high pain threshold?
Yeah, definitely. I think you can put things into perspective as this too shall pass, right? So I'm healing, you know, like with the fractured rib, there are many nights I had to sit up in bed because I was so uncomfortable. My husband would kind of help me sit up in bed, but I'm like, this will pass. This stinks right now, but it'll pass. So yeah, I think, you know, in several triathlons, I had issues where, you know, whether it's having stomach upset or a knee injury or something that I was challenged with during the race, I'm like, hey, as long as I get to the finish line, that's all that matters. And I can get there. If I have to walk and I can't run, then I'll walk. So yeah, I think there's a mental component to this that is sometimes underrated. And I think of one of the people that you interviewed, Gemma. Is it Gemma that had the abilities book?
I haven't interviewed her yet, but I'm hoping to. She has just written a book, as we talk now, she has just written a book, and it's just come out about Hirschsprung's disease. Yes, Gemma Kia. She's yeah, fantastic. Really, really talented. But yeah, hopefully to get her. I have spoken to her a few times, but hopefully get her on the podcast soon when she stopped doing media appearances, I think.
Well, I saw it on Facebook, and I ordered the book. It's sitting in hopefully here soon. But yeah, that, you know, things like that, I think the abilities book, that's such a awesome name that applies to this. It's an ability. It's not a disability. It's not something that's going to hold you back in life.
Definitely. No, that's one of the things that drew me to the book as well. I mean, she has done so many books about so many different illnesses and different things like Hirschsprung's as well. And I love the fact that it's called The Abilities in Me and not disability or whatever it might be. But no, we did. I have mentioned her on this podcast before, because as some people who may be listening to this might have also listened to my episode with English actor Louis Healy, whose mum, Denise Welch, is one of the patrons for Gemma's, one for the Abilities in Me Foundation. She does a lot of work, a lot of promotional work, and also attended one of the gatherings, parties, that they had as well. So, but yeah, they are fantastic books. And with the Hirschsprung's one coming out, I think as we talk now on the 3rd of September, it came out a few days ago, I believe. I know my one arrived. I posted that it had arrived. So if you've seen my Instagram, then I took a picture of it.
Yeah.
But it's such a lovely book. And honestly, for anybody who has a child with Hirschsprung's, it's a very child friendly book. It does tell the story really, really well. So if anybody does have a child with Hirschsprung's, or if you're just an adult with Hirschsprung's like me and you just wanted to read the book to see what it looked like, it's definitely well worth a read. I believe I have it. It will be on Gemma's Instagram anyway, but I believe I have it pinned on mine somewhere. I believe so. And if I don't, I'll do it now. But no, it really is a fantastic book. And another point actually on that as well that I wanted to ask you, With obviously you've seen Hirschsprung's sort of for a while, in terms of it being visible, how has that grown over the years?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
I think it's less visible. I don't feel like, I think in younger ages, I felt like there it may have defined me in a way. Not so much anymore. I feel it's a strength. My scars are somewhat of a roadmap of where I've been, but it's allowed me to get to where I am. I mean, it could have turned out much worse. We know that some people are, you know, Hirschsprung's can cause great infection, and it can subsequently take your life. So I don't feel it defines me. I feel like it empowers me at this
point. Definitely. Most definitely. Yeah. And in sort of media-wise, I know we talked about Gemma's book, but in terms of seeing it in media on Facebook, on Instagram, and around, how do you think that's changed over the years?
I feel like it's more prevalent. You know, some of the conversations recently I saw on one of the Hirschsprung's disease pages recently that astonished me, because I always thought, oh, geez, you know, some people die from Hirschsprung's because of intestinal failure later in life. But, you know, there was a woman that recently commented that she's 88 years old, Hirschsprung's survivor. And like, that's hope right there. I think having those conversations and people chime in, I'm 47, I'm, you know, how old, and this is how long I've had it, and I'm doing great. 88-year-old woman, and that impacted me hugely. Like, okay, this is not something that is going to necessarily have to cause a problem later in life and result in more disability, whether it be, you know, intestinal failure or malnutrition or something like that. So that's encouraging. So I think there's more conversation.
Very. No, I know, obviously, doing this podcast, I'm going to see it a lot more than not. But certainly I've seen, just news-wise and just people coming across Hirschsprung's more, maybe not quite understanding all of it, because sometimes it can be a lot to get your head around, especially when you're talking about sort of four different types as well. But I think it has grown a lot more, which is fantastic, which I really, really love seeing. And then just as we sort of wrap up, finally, you mentioned, I know we talked quite a bit about Iron Man's, and congratulations on those, by the way. Fantastic. Have you retired from Iron Manning, if that's a word, or are you planning to do any more?
I think it's to be determined at this point. Going back to school and getting my nurse practitioner, my oldest son is off in life and doing great. In Sacramento, and college graduate, which I'm very proud of. My daughter is kind of heading down that path, and I feel like once she's situated, that might be an opportunity for me to start back again. Of course, back at sprints, I'm not going to jump into the deep water right away. But also just considering it is a lot of wear and tear in your body. And so at what point do you say, I love the sport, I want to be a fan of the sport, but, you know, I want to make sure that I'm not doing more harm than good. Because it is very stressful, and stress with irritable bowel syndrome can be difficult. So, yeah, I'm hoping maybe I can get back into it when things settle down in life. Yeah, my kids are off and I'm an empty nester. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, you'll have to let us know. You'll have to let us know if you ever get the urge to get back, and we'll cheer you on and promote it.
Thank you.
And also, do your children do Ironmans as well? Have they taken up in your lead, or they have left Ironmans alone?
So my kids have done triathlons. My daughter did one when she was relatively young, like 7. My son did some. My husband has done a couple, not Ironman, but triathlon. Yeah. And but my son is a huge biker and runner, daily. So he's gotten part of that bug. He was never a fan of the swimming. My daughter's not a fan of biking, but she is a runner. So they've taken elements of that that, you know, hopefully I've encouraged along, and they've been great supporters when I was racing. So, I feel like just the healthy part of it has passed on to them as well.
That's fantastic. So they're both sort of heavily into duathlons as such.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. And that must be so great to see as well. Obviously, you have inspired them to do duathlons and to take up biking, take up running, swimming, whatever it might be. Do you think you've also passed down your sort of perseverance and determination? Because I know you've spoken about that a lot as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think the motto for Ironman that I lived by and still is anything is possible. So you can't rule anything out. You have to push forward until, you know, the door slams in your face, you find another one to open. And that's what I tell my kids. And I know that my son, where he's at, he definitely has grasped that concept pretty well. My daughter continues to, but I think she's still growing and thriving. So yeah, I think there's aspects of Ironman in sports, as you probably know, that have excellent elements that you can pass on, and there are great lessons that you learn along the way. You may not do well at one race, but that doesn't mean the next race is going to be the same. And so you keep moving forward.
Absolutely. And that's a wonderful sentiment to finish on. I just wanted to say thank you so, so much for coming on. I know when you messaged, I thought I absolutely have to have you on. Versus that Ironman, Hirschsprungs, all sorts of GI practitioner. And hopefully we've covered all three of those in a bit more depth as well. But yes, I felt you're absolutely perfect for this podcast. So Jodie, just for me, thank you so much for everything you do in the nurse practitioner world. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, Tom.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.